Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Clint Mancella, and we're going to talk about his family, his roots. So welcome, Clint. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Bob. You all right?
I'm very good. So you're actually the third person from the UK that I've had on. I started with my friend Andy and his brother. And, you know, I never realized that there were so many Italians in the UK. And in fact, we lived there for 2 years in Bournemouth, but there weren't a lot of Italian restaurants in Bournemouth. So now, what part of England are you from?
I'm from the north of England. It's called Cumbria, and it's in the Lake District.
Okay,
just,
so yeah,
just
so
how so? Scotland.
Oh, so way up there, yeah,
way up there, yeah.
Yeah, we never got that far up when we were there. We did go to Aberdeen, which I thought was a really, really neat place, didn't really get to the north of England too much until, I guess it was about 7-8 years ago, I went to Liverpool with my son. Of course, you know why we went to Liverpool.
For the Beatles.
exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, when and why did you start researching your family?
Well, I would say it happened about 10 years ago, and I also knew my surname was Italian, and I knew that somebody in my family had an ice cream shop in Maryport. So I used to go to my grandparents' house and just pick the brains and say, you know, who had the ice cream shop and where would it come from and stuff like this. So my granddad, who's still alive, tells us that his granddad, Carlo Minchella, was the first person, probably the first Italian, to move to Maryport, where I live, and he opened an ice cream shop. So that's how it's set up. And then I used to ask for if there had any photos, so he'd give us some old photos of Carlo and Annie's wife and their children. And then he actually had some letters that was written to San Biagio Sarancinisco, where Carlo was from. So I read some letters out to, I found some addresses on the internet, and I wrote them letters inquiring, you know, telling them who I was and about Carlo. And I didn't have much success, to be honest. And then I think by chance, I typed the name into Facebook, and there was a Facebook page, San Biagio Sarancinisco. So I started leaving messages on there. Then anybody that was called Minchella, I was sending them a message. So that's how it started. I got a woman messages back called Louisa. She said, yes, we're related. Her dad's granddad was Petro Minchella. No, sorry, Pasquale Minchella. And he was my great-great-granddad's, Carlos Minchella's brother. So I found that out. And then she told us that Pasquale's grave, it was still in the cemetery at San Baggio. And that was it, really.
Oh, so what year did you, I guess it would be, was it your great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather that came to England?
My great-great-grandfather, he was born in 1859 in San Baggio Sarancinisco, and then he came to England in around 1881, of the research I've done, and from... And then he went to, we think he actually went to Liverpool, but this bit's all a bit hazy because I can't find out anything out. We think he worked on the ships as a confectioner, making sweets on the boat, we think. And then from here, he must have went to Leeds, and this is where he met his wife, Annie Fontana, who was a full Italian. Her mum and dad were from Brolese in Lake Como, the north of Italy. And he was a musician. Paolo and Maria, she had a guest house for Italians. So I think this is where Carlo had met his wife, Annie Fontana. And then from here, they'd moved to Scotland and they'd lived in a couple of different places. I think they were still making ice cream. I can't find anything about this. And then from there, they moved to Maryport, where I live, in about... 1897, we think they moved to here, and this is when he had the ice cream shop. So he had the ice cream shop roughly from then till about just before the war broke out, so 1914, around this time.
And I never realized until I did a piece on Italian immigration to the UK, and that was the ice cream trade was a big trade for Italians, right?
Yeah, well, I heard your podcast when you said that a lot of the Italians in England were ice cream makers. Well, Annie Fontana, my great great grandma, she was one of, I think, 13 children, and two of her sisters, Elizabeth and Rosanna Fontana, they both married two Italians, Giovanni Jacopazzi and Antonio Lavacci, and they, all three of them, and then had ice cream shops. So what was it?
Yeah, that, in America, there are a few that, Italian names on ice cream, but it wasn't like a big deal. Most of the Italians that came to America were laborers, stone cutters, farmers, of course, things like that. But I guess the immigration to the UK started much before they started to immigrate to the USA. Obviously, it's closer, so that's one fortunate thing.
I was talking to a lad and about Italians, and I'm sure he said that some of the Italians used to go to America, but if there was bad weather with the ships, they used to come port at England, and they used to have to get off, and that was it. They weren't going to America. So I don't know if Carlo was going to do that, or he planned to come to England in general.
That's an interesting thing. I did a very interesting piece on the book these two guys wrote about the earliest wave of people coming to America in the 1870s. And what was happening with them is they thought they were going to go to Argentina. But what the steamship lines were doing was taking them to New York because it was cheaper, and they just left them there. And they had no clue. I mean, they were in America, they had no money. It was a very sad thing because they were actually when they were trying to sell these tickets in Italy, they weren't being very honest, and they knew that they weren't going to bring them to New York to Argentina all along. So it was a very, very sad story. So now, have you been back to the hometowns?
I just went recently, just about 4 weeks ago now. So I was in, there's a the person who runs the Facebook page is called Claudio Vis, oh, that's his name. It's called Claudio anyway, and he's like the local historian. So he was helping us with my family tree. He got us Carlo's birth certificate from the church in San Baggio and other bits and pieces. So we went to, flew at Naples, drove to San Baggio, had 3 or 4 nights there. I met Claudio, and had a crack with him and that. And then the next day, I would drop to the cemetery where we found some mink heifers that was related to my granddad. And then we were trying to find the farm where Carlo was born, because my granddad's second cousin, Petro, still lives in the farm. So me and my wife, Dawn, were looking for this farm for maybe 2 hours, and we couldn't find it. Basically just a lawn in a country road with like a group of houses, and then we were spinning about and we couldn't find it. And then I was outside the house, and a woman came out, and she said she couldn't speak any English and I couldn't speak any Italian. I had a translator that I'd bought, but it wasn't working. It just stopped working. So I'd written a letter saying who I was and who I was looking for and how I was related to these people. And she read it, and she said, "Come." She said, "Come with me." So she jumped in a car. I got in our hire car. She flew down these lanes at 100 mile an hour. I couldn't keep up with her. And then she pulled up at this house, roughly where we'd been earlier. And she got out and she was like, "This house," pointing at this house. So this man came out, my granddad's second cousin, Pedro, and honestly, he looked like my granddad. It was unbelievable. So I give him the letter and he read the letter. Well, this woman, Maria, she was called, she read the letter to them. I showed them some old photos, and same, he couldn't speak any English, I couldn't speak any Italian, so it was hard. And the translator stopped working again. So he basically said that he couldn't remember anything. So then the woman, so I got my photo took with him and shook his hand. And then the woman, Maria, she said, I'll take you to the town hall. So she took us into San Baggio and I went and met the local person who runs the town hall, and he was looking for some documents, but he couldn't find anything I hadn't already had. So I was in there for about 2 hours as well. So,
and that's, you know, that's an interesting story, because I interviewed somebody a couple of years ago, very similar story, where they were kind of just driving around, but they happened to wind up at the house.
They didn't
know it. And they went inside and they saw all the pictures on the mantle and everything and like that. And like you said, you know, people look like each other. And
Well, I had in my mind of a rundown farm, like an English farm, run down with a barn and maybe a tractor outside. But this was just like a house. I would say it had been modernized recently. And it just looked like a normal house. It didn't look like a farm to me at all. But that's where they lived anyway. And like I say, it was nice to see. It was a shame that the translator had stopped working. But that night we went to meet Claudio again at the night in the pub. And we went in the restaurant, sorry. So we went in, we had some tea. And there was a fella, Aurelio, he was called. And I didn't know his name, kept staring at me and my wife, because in San Baggio, there's only 300 people live there. So if anybody goes in, you've got to stand out. I'm nearly 6 foot and stick thin. And my wife's got bright blonde hair. So we stood out a mile. So anyway, there's this fella and he kept looking at us. And I was like, catching me asking, oh, I hope now it's going to happen. Oh, yeah. And he said, he couldn't speak any English either, but his cousin, Anna, she was translating for us. And he was saying, who are you? What are you doing in here? And I said, oh, my great granddad Carlo Minkella was from San Baggio. We came to look at the place where he was born. And he said, Minkella, you a Minkella? And I was saying, yeah, I'm a Minkella. And he said, I'm a Minkella too. So jumped up and started hugging us. And he was buying us drink. And his cousin who was translating said, I'm actually a Minkella as well. I went, all right. So we were talking to these two people. Then another person came in. And this Arello said, hey, see him there? Hey, Minkella. So we were talking to him as well. So I was related to quite a few of them. So then Claudio came, like the local historian. And I was saying, oh, I'm related to him and him and him. And he said, you're probably related to everybody that lives in this village. I said, why? He said, well, there was a plague in, like, I think it was 1665. And it wiped out every single person in the village, killed everybody. So the local priest decided we're getting they wanted families to move there. So there was five families moved to San Baggio, five main families, the Minkellas, Valentinas, Rossi's, and I can't remember the other two, but basically all the people that live in San Baggio are off these five families roughly, so related to a lot of people that live there.
That's crazy. Wow, that's something.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I tell everybody, you know, they ask about going to Italy and everything. And I say, you know, Rome is great and, you know, Milan and those places. But unless you go to the village, it's just not the same. I mean, that's the real Italy. And you never know who you're going to run into.
No. It was quite one of the people that we met in San Baggio that could speak English. He actually lives in Glasgow in Scotland, which is 2 hours away from my house. And he owns a pizzeria there. So that was quite strange as well.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. And you know, we were just there. We were there in June just recently. We had postponed for almost 2 years. Two years. And I didn't know that my father had first cousins in Torre del Greco. I knew the name, I knew the place, because my father had mentioned it many, many, many years ago, 30 years ago, something like that. And I met his first cousin from my great-grandfather's second wife. And he brought us to the house of my grandmother's youngest brother's daughters, both in their 90s. And same thing, one of them looked like my grandmother.
And
I told the story, for people who listen to the podcast all the time, a little bit repetitive, but they had photographs that my grandmother had sent them in the 1920s, 30s, 40s.
Yeah.
So again, that's why I tell people, you even if you don't know the town that you're from, if you know the region, you have to go there because it's, you know, it's so different. Everything is so different. Yeah. So growing up, so now your father was Italian, obviously. Is your mom, was she Italian too?
My granddad's half Italian. My granddad was half Italian. What was quite different, I think, between the Italians that grew up in America to England. I don't think that Carlo wanted his family to be Italian. I think he probably wanted them to blend into society, because all the on the birth certificates, they've all got an Italian name, but on some of the death certificates, they're all changed to the English names. Like Giovanni was John. My great granddad was Luigi, but he got Louis, and Federico. All the names were changed, so they probably wanted them to like fit in with everybody, if you know what I mean, in England.
Yeah, especially, and you know, it was similar in America. Some people even changed their names to be more anglicized. My family didn't, but when we were growing up, if somebody asked you what are you would say Italian, and then it became Italian American, and now we, you know, obviously when you go to Italy, you're American, you're not Italian.
Yeah.
They see you in a different light, and it's completely different. But the reason I asked you that was, did you grow up on Italian food or English food or a mixture of both?
Oh, just all English food. But
oh, that's terrible.
I know. But my granddad can remember his two uncles. It was Carlo, but he got Charlie, and then Auntie Cam, and then Angelo. These three Italians lived together. And when he's told us, another family members have, when they went round, they ate Italian food, and they had like allotments and grew stuff as well. And then my granddad's dad, Louis, he used to grow garlic. And my granddad said, and my grandma said, that nobody round here in England grew garlic in them days. You know, it wasn't hardly heard of. So they obviously still ate, even though they became English, they still ate Italian food.
We ate a mixture of both, obviously. But you know, both my parents are of Italian descent, so we ate a lot of Italian food. But the reason I asked is, like I said, I lived there for 2 years, and breakfast was my favorite meal. Let's put it that way. But you know what? We used to enjoy going to the pubs on Sunday, because they would have like the three course roast meal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it was good. It was inexpensive, and it was a nice. But boy, I'm going back 25 years. I think it was like maybe 5 or 6 pounds or something like that. You know,
a meal
in the pub.
It's a bit more expensive than that, but you still get a three course meal for £15, maybe. £10.
Well, considering that's not bad. That's not bad at all. We used to enjoy going to the two things we really enjoyed, going to the pubs for that meal. And we used to just take a drive on Sunday through the countryside until we saw one of the old manor houses and hop in and visit one of them. That was always a lot of fun. So I have to ask now, have you, I know a lot of people in Europe don't, have you done a DNA test at all?
Yeah, I've done the DNA test, and I also done my granddad's DNA test because he's 96.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So I've done this is quite interesting. know, before when I was saying about the village, San Baggio got wiped out and there was nobody living there, so they got people in. Well, there was, I done my granddad's DNA and there was, he had six, the DNA matched 61 people. And 16 of that people were related to my granddad. And this DNA came up from Filignano, which is the village about half an hour away from San Baggio. So when I was driving around in the car, I thought, I'm going to go to Filignano, just for a look about. So we drove there and it was, the village was tiny. Like if you blinked, you would miss it. It was that small. But so we went in the church and had a look about, and then we came out and there was war monument. So I went over and there was a Minkella on the war monument. So I would guess that this is where the Minkella family came from before they went to San Baggio and then started there. That's just my own personal opinion. But it was just weird how 61 people's DNA came from this small little village.
Well, and that would make sense, like you said earlier, if they if the priest went out, if they went out to repopulate the town, they probably went to, you know, surrounding towns and, you know, asked or grabbed or paid or whatever they did to get people to relocate. That's pretty interesting. That's a pretty interesting story to be able to do that. Yeah, I wish I had done my mom's. I didn't. I should have. But, you know, it is what it is, I suppose. I'm not really surprised that a lot of people in Italy don't do the DNA tests. I wish I could convince at least a couple of my cousins over there to do it. Because it'd be interesting to find. So what nationalities did you come back besides Italian?
My granddad's, he came back as Greek and Southern Italian, was 23%, which San Biagio, it's in Lazio now, but it was in Campania, so it was Southern Italian, but it changed provinces. So he had Greek and Italian was 23%, Iberian was 13%, but it's Spain owned the Southern Italy, didn't you? So that's probably where that came from. And then Northern Italian was 7.5%, that was his grandma was Northern Italian, so that's where that came from. And they had Scandinavian and Eastern European in him, just 3.2% on both of them.
Yeah, and the Spanish, that's quite a bit of Spanish. So there must have been potentially some nobility or something like that, because most of the Spanish that came were nobles. They didn't.
Oh, you were there.
They didn't bring a lot of regular people. So it's possible way, way back, or something else, you know, the noble was fooling around with somebody else.
I didn't know that Southern Italy was owned by Spain until I went to Naples, and then I went to Spanish quarters, and then obviously started reading stuff, and then I realized that it was. I didn't know that until recently. So that when I looked the other day, that just kind of twigged. I wonder if that's where it came from.
Yeah, and I had kind of known it because I'm a big history guy, so I had kind of known it a little bit. But my grandmother actually comes from two noble families, and so when I was able to trace them back, there's Spanish filtered throughout the whole 300 years, 400 years. Yeah. And somebody told me that when the Spanish nobles came, there weren't enough Spanish women of, you know, rank to marry. So they started marrying into the Italian nobility. And that's how it all started intermixing. So, you know, when I look back at the records, you'll see, you know, an Italian noble marrying a Spanish noble woman or vice versa. And then they did a lot of those marriages, obviously, like they did in England, you know, for political reasons and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I did my two children are adopted, and my daughter, her birth father, both of birth parents came to America in the 1700s early on, but her birth father, I was able to trace him back to one of the Bassano brothers. The Bassano brothers were court musicians to Henry VIII. And they came in like 1400s, whatever, you know, whatever he was reigning. And obviously they married all English women, right? Because they were in, that's where they were. And she is a distant cousin of Princess Di. She's a dispenser going back to, I don't know, 1400 to the start of the dispensers anyway. So that was like really interesting find.
I just listened to that podcast this week when you were talking about that. I just listened to it this week, yeah.
So you know, that was very interesting to find that out. Like I said, you know, you never know what you find. I know a lot of people are kind of funny about doing the DNA and everything like that, but I haven't had any issues with it as far as any of that goes. So now the rest of your family, do they get excited when you find something, or are they like my family where they just say, ah.
Yeah, they just said, is he going on about that again? That's all I get. Is he still going on about Italians? I done the DNA test and with my granddad's been on, I got quite a lot of matches. So I was messaging some people and I was in contact with a person from Carlisle, and he showed us what information he had, and I showed him what information I had, and his great great grandma and my great great grandma Annie, and I can't remember, they were sisters. So I had a look on the wedding certificate, and he was called Giovanni Giacopazzi. He was the best man at Carlo's wedding, my great great granddad, and Carlo was the best man at his wedding.
Oh wow,
that was quite interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, and that's, you know, that's what you find in a lot of these records. I know one person; she's basically mapped out the whole town from the, you know, Antonini records, and I've done some of it, but you see the same names popping up over and over and over again. Who's a witness to this thing? Who's a sponsor for this thing? Who's, you know, like you said, who's the best man or stuff like that? Again, there's such small little towns. Surprising. Yeah. It's not surprising that they do that. So now, have you come across any like interesting stories or occupations or anything in your research?
Another interesting thing was I found out that the record, I can't go back further than 1859 in San Baggio, because there was an earthquake and then there was like heavy rain. So all the records pre-1859 have been destroyed. So I've heard you before saying you can go back a couple of hundred years with your family. Mine, the Minkella story ends there. You can't go back anymore. And then in World War One, the Germans dropped some bombs on the cemetery in San Baggio. So all, there's no graves, old gravestones there. They're all been destroyed. So the my family kind of starts with the birth of Carlo. But two of Carlo's sons are in the First World War. My great-granddad, Louis Minkella, and his brother, John Minkella. And John got killed. They were both in the Border Regiment. John got killed at the Battle of Somme in France. He was an unknown soldier. So that was quite interesting. And I got the local historian at Carlisle. That's where the Border Regiment was from. And he's pinpointed the movements where they were at in France. And then how John got killed. Well, he was last seen before the bomb got dropped on. He got killed. And then my great-granddad, was mentioned in dispatches. But these records, they got destroyed in London in the Second World War when the Germans bombed London. So we have no proof of that, just word of mouth for that as well, which was quite interesting. Also, my great-granddad Louis, he got hit by a bit of shrapnel. He had a hole in the side of his body there that was, you could fit your fist in, it was that big. They were both in even though they were full Italian, they were both in the First World War fighting for England.
Mm-hmm. And how about your granddad? Did he fight in World War II?
My granddad was 18 in World War II, and he signed up, and he was getting sent out on a boat somewhere. And as this happened, the Americans dropped the bomb. So the boat turned around and went to Malta, and my granddad stopped at Malta for 12 months. He said it was the best 12 months of his life.
Oh boy, you can't beat that.
No. And in the Navy Club, there was a quota of all the veterans from World War II. And my granddad was the only one without a medal on. And I said to my granddad, I said, how come you haven't got a medal on, granddad? He said, I didn't deserve you. So that's it. Was the best 12 months of his life anyway.
Oh, that's too funny. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, you know, I had an uncle. My uncle was in the U.S. Army. He enlisted, and he was blind in one eye. So when he went to take the eye test, they told you, you know, cover your eye and read the chart. So they said, okay, switch. So he just switched hands and read the chart with the same eye twice, and they didn't catch it. And so then when he was in boot camp, when he was shooting the rifle, he was shooting out of the wrong eye. And they said, no, you shoot this one. He said, I can't see out of that eye. I have to shoot this one. So they didn't send him out. They told him he would never go overseas or anything like that. What wound up happening is, since he spoke fluent Italian, he wound up in North Africa guarding Italian prisoners.
Oh, yeah.
He told us that he would eat with the Italian prisoners because they had spaghetti and sauce, and the Americans were eating out of cans. So he used to go over there, cook with them, and eat with them, and I guess have a grand old time. I guess they didn't have any wine, but they had the pasta and the sauce. Yeah. We'll meet. So what did your granddad and your father do? What were their occupations in the UK?
My granddad was, well, after the war, he worked in he was an engineer, so he used to fix airplanes not far from us. Then he put his cell into night classes and became a school teacher. So he was a local school teacher where I live, like woodwork and technician. And then his dad, Louis, he was, after the war, he worked at, he went down the pit, and he was a coke oven, worked on the coke oven where they used to put coal in and separated the gases, I think, something like that. And he worked down there. Then he also worked at, there's a dump where we live, used to be an ammunition dump for World War II. We worked in there as well. And then Carlo, my great-great-grandfather, after World War One, he went down the pit as well. There was a lot of pits where we live, so he went down there as well. And the rest of all the children, the Minkella children, they all worked down the pit as well.
Yeah, well, I guess it was like, I guess almost like a family business or something like that. At that point, you know, everybody gravitated to the same type of thing. And here in America, for some strange reason, I don't know why, I'm trying to. I sent a note to a guy who would know, but he hasn't answered me yet. My mother's family's from Bari, and in New York, they all became icemen, you know, delivering cake, big chunks of ice in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Why everybody from this, you know, that area became icemen? I have no idea.
Well, a lot of people from Bari became icemen.
Yeah, well, in America, yeah.
They maybe knew how to make ice, because when I was researching ice cream makers, ice was hard, really expensive, and it didn't last long. That's why a lot of Italians would have ice cream businesses, but if they didn't sell the ice cream, they didn't make any money. So,
right. And I'm still fascinated about what, you know, like I said earlier, about how the ice cream makers gravitated to England for some strange reason.
I would guess that they all picked an area that was getting developed, and that was going to be their place to sell ice cream. So I would guess that Carlo came to Maryport because they were building a prom, and it was going to go 14 miles across the coast. So I would say Carlo thought, this will be a good area for me to set up an ice cream shop here. And there was no other Italians there, so it would have been the only ice cream shop in Maryport.
Yeah, maybe. We had, when we went to Liverpool, we had some friends in Northern Ireland, and they took us to an ice cream shop, and I'm pretty sure it had an Italian name. I don't remember, but they had several branches up in, you know, up around Belfast and places like that. And I didn't you know, I didn't connect the dots back in the time, but I'm pretty sure they told me, you know, about ice cream and in Northern Ireland, same type of thing. The Italians went there and opened up the ice cream shops. Yeah, pretty interesting type of stuff. Well, Clint, this has been a lot of fun. You know, as you listen, I love doing this kind of stuff. I love hearing the stories. You know, like you said earlier, when you happened upon the farm, those things just don't happen by accident. There was a reason for you to find that farm.
yeah. That was really good.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.